Okay, this is just a continuation of our first interview with Emmanuel Mokgoga, and we are here in Mandashoek on today's the 26th, correct? 27th?
Yep.
27th of February 2008, and speaking to Emmanuel as we continue in our more in-depth interview. First of all, thanks Emmanuel, once again, for making yourself available.
You're welcome, bro.
Okay. What we want to do is we want to find out a little bit more about your family.
Yeah.
We talked very briefly in the first interview about that. So feel free to tell us whatever you want. First of all, let's talk first of all about your father. Tell us a little bit about your father. What kind of a man was he? What do you remember?
Yes. I'm still remember because he passed in 1993. And then he was working at Vereeniging, at the place called McCaflin. He was chef there, just next to the Liqua River. And he was a good father, like other father in this country. Because if you can see now, we are six in the family. We are only having one sister, and she's the first one in his five brothers. So she's a nurse, and then my brother, the first brother in the men, he's working at the hospital. He's the one who's ordering the food at the hospital. I don't know what they call it.
Which hospital?
In Dilokong Hospital.
Okay.
And then other three my brothers, they're working in the mines. And then I really believe that he was a good father. And then we have grown up and under his law or his responsibility, because he was working far and then taking the responsibility of my mother and the parents and the children also. And it's just, I knew that there was my first brother called Lawrence. He was not talking himself. I don't know how can I call that. He was not talking himself. I don't know what.
Was he disabled?
Yeah, disabled, yes. And then he passed away in 1976. He was working at Soweto in Joburg. He was staying in Soweto. And even today, we don't know where they have buried him. And it's that time of striking, going, everybody going up and down, apartheid and then taking place. And he was killed by the people, because I still remember there was a photo where he was lying down and then there was a lot of blood on the floor where he was lying. And then I sometimes thinking about that, and my father is dead, and then we don't know where is his son at this moment, who buried him, what the cause of the incident, why he was killed. And then I'm thinking about, I think also my mother and my father, they're thinking about the scream, because he was disabled and not talking himself also. How people they killed him, and how he was screaming about that incident happening. So I try to touch with the Scorpion to help me to investigate the death of my brother, and then also trying to ask my parents and my brothers. It's simple that I don't want to use this word of maybe my brothers, they are not care. It's just maybe they don't have the same pain that I'm having in my heart or in my body about my brother. Because if you can see now, dear, everyone want to know how their parents have been died or how
sure.
Their brothers. So I'm also feel that one day I must investigate and found the bone of my brother. And then take the bone of my brother and give him respect like everybody, and then we have to bury him. Maybe if I can do that, if we can do that together with my brothers and sister before my mother, she can die. I don't say my mother, she must die, but everybody who lives in this in the world, we believe that we will die. The person or the man who born by the woman, his days or her days, they're counted. So I mean that the days will be the time of the finish of the days, meaning that we'll be going to die. And my mother also, she's still going to die. And then I feel that before she dies, But before everybody can, I'll be happy if we can find the bones, or we can find where my brother he was buried.
Can I ask you something, this about your brother? When you say people killed him, do you know? You don't know who or.
Yes, I don't know who killed my brother, and I, because of the blood, and then the way police from Joburg send the message to my other police next to the police station, the way they've explained to my mother and my father, they told them, my parents, that he was killed, and then they showed my parents the photo. He was lying down, and there was a blood, meaning that maybe they have done something to him. That is why there was a blood.
And just coming back to your father, was he born in Mandasuk?
No, my father was born at the place at Skinot. I don't know if you know the place. It's somewhere at Jane First.
Near Jane First.
Yeah, at the place called Masehleng. And I don't know when they come in Mandasuk in 50s for sure. And then they've come in Mandasuk. They were staying at the hills there, and then they've come from the hills and to build the houses there. Yeah.
So he came with your mom already?
Yes.
He was already married?
Yeah, he was already married, my mother.
And your mom's family, do you know where they're from?
Yeah, they're from the same place at Chen Fes.
Okay.
They are from the same place at Chen Fes. And I think they were together from that time. And then that is why we are still with my mother also, see.
And besides your brother that died, the one that you mentioned, all of your other brothers and your one sister are still living, correct?
Mm, yes.
And they are, you said the three brothers are working in the mines.
Yes.
Are they in this area or where are they working? Which mines?
Yes, my brother, his name is Charles, is working at Modikwa.
Okay.
And then the guy who's coming after Charles is Gabriel, is working at Marula. And then the guy who's called Simon is working at Modikwa. I'm coming after Simon. So they are just near to Mandasuk. Marula is just near to us.
Sure.
And also Modikwa is just at our farms.
And your brother who passed, was he the firstborn?
Yes, he was the firstborn.
And what does that mean? I know when we were here last time, you were saying to me that because you last born, it means that it's your duty to take care of your parents.
Yes.
What are the responsibilities for the firstborn?
On the firstborn, we know when you are the firstborn, Ahmed, you be proud because your parents, they are taking care of you. And especially when you are the firstborn, and they want to make sure that everything you need, you got. And then when you begin to a man, and then do things as your own, and then maybe let's say you be like you work, you'll like to be like your parents. The children who are coming after you or behind of you, you will try to make sure that they are getting the responsibility that your parents have did to you. So I think you'll be proud, and then if your parents, they've never worked, they've never got the chance to build the house, to do things good in the house. If you are working, and then if you are educated, you can see things, I don't want to use this word of educated, if you maybe are going up and down and see different things, from especially when we are staying in the rural area, if you are working in the urban area, you will buy things for your parents and come things to the place where you are staying. So when you are the firstborn, you must just be proud and then take the responsibility for your parents and also to your younger brothers and sisters.
And as the last born, your mother stays here with you.
Yes.
Tell us about your mother a little bit. You obviously have a very close relationship with her.
Yes, My mother, she's good for me, and I believe, and for everybody. Because since I was born, she never, never wants me to do bad things. She always wants me to do good things. And then she encouraged me to love other people. And I'm happy because in this family, when somebody do a wrong thing or good thing, she's calling us and to say, you see, Simon, what he's doing is bad. And then when Simon do good things tomorrow, or Gabriel, he's calling us and what he's doing is good. So meaning is loving us equally, because we are all her children. So there is no any different to my mother. And then he's encouraging us, all of us, to do good things. So, and then I praise her as a hero, because she met different challenges in the country. One day I was checking in the box where he puts his ID and the old ID and what. And then I saw someone writing that the police wrote that he must, they wrote on the letter, that is the, well, I don't know what they were having when they were going to open area. They were going to police station and get the permission. How long they're going to stay to spend at Vereeniging in Joburg. And then they wrote on the letter that if she's not coming back on that time, she'll be arrested. And my mother told me that she's never come back by that time, and she was arrested and staying in the prison. And then I was just thinking myself, how was the prisoner at that time? And then how was my mom at that time in the jail? And then what those, that old apartheid, because they were just beating everybody outside, but how my mother, she was in the prison. So I was just thinking about it, because I was also arrested one day, and then I saw the life, how he's in the jail. So it's not good, but I was just, even if that time she was still young, but now she's old, but I was just thinking about that when she was still young, about that.
And how did it make you feel?
I feel bad, but there's nothing I can do. It's just, to me, when I'm watching the TV or I'm watching the disc for the striker, when especially when I'm watching the film of Sarafina, when I'm watching Zwage singing about the where the black people that come from, I'm just next to the tears sometimes. But I feel to carry the gun and go out and then to revenge my parents, or to revenge the people who were fighting for democracy in the country. But I'm just saying, it's nothing I can do. And then it's better if I stop to think about this. It's better if I stop to watch the Sarafina film, or to watch the drums of Mzwagi, see, or to stop to watch other things about the strike kill, because I will maybe became otherwise, you see.
And your mom, how did she feel about it? How did she tell you about the story of her going to jail?
She I didn't ask my mom a lot of questions about how it was in the jail. And then I just think about how it was in the jail. So I didn't ask my mother lot of questions, because I didn't want to chip in. As I told, I'm saying to you now that when I'm thinking about this story, I'm just next to the tears sometimes.
Sure.
And while we're on the question, your own family now, we didn't really talk too much about your partner, your wife, mm-hmm. and your little child. Tell about your own family. Anything that you want to tell us about them?
The name of my wife is Grace Komani. She's from Genesis, a place called Amalepani. I met Grace at Vereeniging. She was staying at Van der Beek Park. And then he was attending school at the college at Van der Beek Park. And I met Grace in the at the church. We were attending the same church. So I was the secretary at the church that I was attending with Grace. So she was traveling from Van der Beek to Sasolburg. And then I was needing time to speak with Grace about love. Mm-hmm. So I was not having chance to speak with Grace because it's just attending church, and then after the church she's going to take seven, and then sometimes I'm busy writing the books in the church with the pastor. And then I was even refusing to ask Grace the telephone number, public, where I can contact her, and then so we can talk.
Or were you shy?
No, I was not shy. I was just respecting my pastor and everybody was in the church. And one day it happens that one of the members died in the church. And then I was called by the pastor. And then I was told that I must inform other members. And then the name of Grace was mentioned that I must also call Grace. Don't forget that I also need the phone number of Grace. And the pastor gave me the phone number. So I phoned Grace, but I spoke to the lady who's staying with Grace. She was not even her own cell phone. So I left a message, and Grace, after that, she phoned me back. And then it's where I started to communicate with Grace. After talking about the death of the member of the church, and then I started my own personal issues. So, and then it's where she started to visit me and then talk about the issue. So, and then until she finished at the school, and then comes to Sasol, and then he started to stay with me. And to me, Grace is a good lady. And then I what I did now, I married her as my wife, but I didn't make the white wedding. I've just made Lovola to their family, so that is why she's allowed to stay with my family here. So I still want to marry her, and really, and then to be my wife. She's my wife, but I want to just to finish everything to her, because when you love the girls, you must just show that the girl that you love her, and then you do anything what you can for her. The Bible says you must. We Paul says, quoting to him, we as a man, we were not supposed to have the wives or to stay with the women, but because of the feelings, we must just marry one woman, so we can build the houses, and then we can make, we can plow and do anything. So I just want to show my wife that I love her. And then she spoke to me that she's good, and her family is good. And then I believe that we will be together until the end.
Okay, I want to come back to this, but before we do this, I just want to ask you a quick question about your dad and your mom. And in terms of the community, to different families are different levels of respect and so forth. How did your family fit into the broader community in Mandasuk? Were they well respected, your father?
Yeah, yes, as you know, especially the culture of Rabili. Your father is my father. So I believe he was getting the full respect from everybody. And even if my father was not spending the time in Mandasuk, because he was always out to celebrate to work, to take care for his family. So the family of Mahoha and the family, I mean, my father also, they were getting respect from the community. Even now, the family of Makgoga is still getting the respect from everybody in Mandasuk.
And is that because of who your father was, or just because this is how the Bapedi relate to each other?
I believe that it's because of the whole respect of Bapedi, and also the way my father he was, or the family of Makgoga they was. Because my father, he was just a symbol, like everybody in Mandasuk. And then he was not, as I know, he was not doing bad things to everybody. And then even now, my mother is not doing any bad thing to everybody. They're open and then feeling to help other people, especially the next door and the other family. And they're feeling pain when other people are there, they're involved in bad things. So I believe the issue of Bapedi, the culture of Bapedi and the respect of Bapedi is still going on in Bapedi province or Bapedi and Raskukun. So that is why we are still having that little respect for everybody.
And then within, just to turn the question around, in this community, what kind of family wouldn't be respected? What kind of man would the community look down upon?
When I'm saying people they're bad, especially when you are proud. Let's say you are blessed, you are owning shops or taxis. We mean that maybe you are blessed because we are having something in your pocket. We're different to other people. And then if you are proud and then we are not helping other people, the first thing what the community are going to do, they will take you as you are proud and then you're not taking care for anyone from this community. So I'm telling you, they will pretend as you pretend. Because you are not helping them, and then they will pretend to you, and then they are not going to love you.
Okay. I just want to come back to another thing you said. You were saying when you got married, you just did lebola, not white wedding.
Yeah.
And that word, white wedding, when you... I think I know what you mean.
Yes.
But maybe just clarify.
Oh. When I'm talking about the white wedding, you know this thing of the rings and the other stuff, rings and then toasting. You see, it's just an entertainment. It's not for the culture of Bapedi. It's coming with the white people that they think of the rings. So that is what we're calling the white wedding. And then this issue of the signing at court, and then saying no, we will be together on the deal.
You be together for the rest of your life.
Yeah, for the rest of the life, and then also when we sign, we say no, the property, what the
community thing, of property.
Yeah, we see this thing of the property, what we'll be together until. So that is the issue that is coming with the white people. According to the culture of Bapedi, we are saying men. Is a man in the family, in the house. And then he's taking responsibility for everything. Meaning if I bought the sofa belongs to me. So they are not belongs to everybody, they belong to me. So if the woman wants to pack his stuff and her stuff and go home back, and then she's not getting anything. But at this moment, at this time now, we are going sheshe. So we are going 50-50. We have to go to the court, and then court saying, you have signed here, and then you said you will divorce your wife when you die. So, but you are still alive now. So, meaning you didn't follow. You are not behind of your ways. So, you are taking 50-50. So that thing is just coming with this puja.
Okay.
And so, in yourself, what do you think about the difference between the kind of traditional Bapedi wedding and the what you call the white wedding? Is it just this issue of property?
Yeah, and then there is the when you are doing the white wedding, you will spend. You mean that, yeah, you see when you buy a different thing, you're still going to buy a ring, and then it's expensive. And then the wines, and then you will get tables to make, you get shirts for the people, you're still going to get different stuff just at the table. You're still going to get the videos for recording, and then bro, you're still gonna get that. You spend. So when you're doing the wedding as your culture, as Papeli, you just send the people, and I can just send the people and give them 8,000 rand if I don't have the kettles that I can forward it to my wife, because usually we're not using the money. I must just take two goats, two sheep and two cattle and donkeys, if I got two donkeys, and then I will cut my wife. But at this time, you have to use cash. So I'll say 8,000, 6,000, and then I just send the people. I said, no, I don't have anything in my pocket, so I'm finished. So I ask Grace to come to stay with me and help me.
And if, say, if I wanted to get married to a Bapedi woman, would they prefer cash or, in most cases, or livestock?
You see now, people, they're not farming anymore. People, they're not having cattle anymore. So they will expect cash from them.
Okay. Now, just on this issue of the wedding, because it's an interesting one for me, because is that, you know, you met your wife in church.
Yeah.
And which I imagine would be a Christian church.
Yes.
And how does the church wedding relate to either the traditional or the white wedding?
The church wedding is the same like a white wedding.
Okay.
Yeah, because also the church sometimes is against the culture of the wedding, because they are now following the Bible how it is. So the Bible is coming also is the white people. So, but I don't want to cheat in the Bible and other stuff. See, the Bible is the same, is coming with the white people, the way I know, I understand that. And then also the wedding of the church is supposed to be like the white wedding.
And so in your life, and I know I'm getting maybe a little bit personal, if you at any point, I'm too personal for you, you can tell me,
yeah,
you don't want to answer. But in your life, what then is more important, insofar as you're a church-going man, but you're also a traditional Bapedi man. And as you're saying, there's sometimes a tension between the two. In your life, what's more important? Which is it more important to be?
For me, what I think is very important. If I can think to take the culture, it's very important for me. If I can think to take the white wedding or
the
Christian wedding or whatever, is right for me. It's very important for me. So what you think, I think is very important for everybody. What you think is very important. So it's depending what I think, but from my side, I like my culture, and I'm also like to change things to be changed. You see, so I can take the white wedding, and then I can also take the culture of Bapedi. So maybe if I can join that things too, you know, I can make things something better.
Okay, we're just going to, we're just going to, I'm going to ask you just to tell us a little bit more. In the first interview, you told us about growing up, or at least spending a little bit of time as a kid for Standard 2 in the Free State.
Come again?
In the Free State. Mm-hmm. You said in the interview in the Free State.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then you said you came to Mandasuk after Standard 2. When you finished Standard 2, that's when you arrived in Mandasuk.
Yes.
Correct. So tell us a little bit more about that, the growing up there in that, when you were a very small boy in that area in Yunlacheng.
I was,
because it's a very different place than this.
Yes,
place. Yes.
And then I was happy when I was going to the Upper Nubia at Free State, because I was going by Christmas time. After I come back, after I come back from Yunlacheng, and then when is the Christmas time, December time, when you close the school, and everybody wants to go to Joburg, Yunlacheng, to visit. And then I was happy when I was going there, because every year where my father, he was working, they was doing a farewell, a party. And then the children, they were getting the present there from the company. Watch, a car, motorbike, just different things. And then children, they have passed at the school, they were getting different to other children. So it was good for me, because there was different things that we can use for play. We were having different motorbike and
Hello.
Other...
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Fine, I'm me.
Okay.
And getting other things, different. You see, when I'm here at home, I just playing soccer and going to the hills and then going up and down and hunting. So there it was different, getting chance to get bicycle and then to just go around about the things.
Just before we things, you were born here in Mandasuk, but
no.
You were born in Vereeniging.
Yes.
All right. And then was both your parents living in Vereeniging at the time?
Yeah, they were just going.
Or they were coming back and forth?
Monthly, after 2 months, they're coming here. Yeah.
So were you spending most of your time there in Vereeniging?
Yes. I was spending, because my mother, she told me also that she was afraid that I'm not going to pronounce Sepedi the way I'm talking Sepedi now. Because if you see at Vereeniging, they're talking Southern Sotho, and sometimes people are saying it's Swan. But this Southern Sotho. So when I was going to Vereeniging, I was speaking that language. And then it would be difficult for me when I'm here to speak my mother tongue, Sepedi. So she told me that she was also afraid that maybe I'm not going to speak Sepedi first.
All right. And when you left Vereeniging, why did you leave? Why did you move here after Standard 2 to come to school this side?
I don't know the reason. I think it's because my parents decided that I must just come back home.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then was your mom staying here?
No, she was going up and down.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What did you, as a child, what did you like better? To be sort of more in the urban area or in the country here, in the rural area? Which one?
Yeah.
Where did you?
When I was still young, I was feeling that I must just be at the urban area.
It was more exciting for you?
Yes, really. It was exciting for me, because there was different things going up and down there. There was a movement. You see, most of people like to say the people who would have grown up at the urban area, the difference to the people who would have grown up at the rural areas. When they are talking, because they are mixed with Zulu, Xhosa, white people, so they learn other things quickly and different things from other people. So here now we are just Vapedi. See, we are just doing the same thing, what other people in Babelia are doing. So there is no different thing. So other people, they feel that those people who are growing up at urban area, they are learning a lot of things and different things than the people who are staying in the rural areas as one family, as the one nation. Not nation, but that family of Babelia.
Okay. You know, when I was a kid, I moved around a lot. And every time I moved to a new area, I get into trouble with the boys in the new area. Was it difficult to move here from Vereeniging? Like, how did you fit in when you just came here, considering you were a boy from the town?
Yeah, but I was not moving alone. I was always moving with other people, my brothers and my parents. Yeah, but when we were playing just around here, yeah, we sometimes get in tough time to other small other guys, you see, and then trying to say, no, we are from the rural areas, we are Bedi, and then Bedi, they are so blind and so. And then I was like to fight and then to say, no, I'm not, even if I'm Bedi, I'm not doing that things we are seeing to meet. So when you're growing up, you have to meet that that situation.
And you know, you were saying your mom was afraid you're not going to be able to speak Babedi properly. When you came, was your accent a little bit funny?
My mother.
No, you were saying your mom was saying that she was afraid you're not going to be able to speak Babedi properly. Was it the case that when you came, it was difficult for you to understand?
In Mandasu.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was different. And then they will say, well, what do you mean? And then sometimes they think that you think you are clever or you are proud about other language that you are talking. And then I was not just doing because I like to do that. It was because that I spent a lot of time at Vereeniging. So I was using that Southern Sotho than my language, because even in the house, my father sometimes he was not talking the our language, because he's usually there and then talking that Southern Sotho. And then when I'm going out, I have to speak Sotho with other people. So when I come back, sometimes I forgot, and then he started to use other weight of Southern Sotho. You see.
Okay. And you know, you were saying earlier that your father was well respected within the community of Mandasuk.
Yeah.
Within that white world, you know, in Vereeniging,
yes,
in terms of where you worked and so forth, was he well respected there?
At the camp where they were staying, he was well respected by the people, because he was respecting other people. But he was always complaining about when he's from the work. He was saying there is a white guy at the work who is treating him as a child. And then my father, he was cooking. When he finished to cook, he must take things to the, I can use this word of bus, even if it's not, it's just a bus means boss. See, he was supposed to take the food to those people and then to see if the right food, cake, he was doing cake and chocolates and then other stuffs. And then those guy, that guy, he was just coming to take that food and taking the food to the bosses, as if he's the one who did that.
Huh.
And then he was treating my father because of my father's color. He was not believing that my father he can do what he was supposed that things must be done by the white people. So my father was doing that, and he was always complaining, saying, "No, he's treating him as a child. He's treating him because like the way he's treating him because of his color." And then he was just obeying what he's saying because he's a white guy. And then my father, he wants to get paid at the end of the month, and then he wants to treat his children. So until we grew up, at that situation, my father being treated by other people from the work. But at the camp where they were staying, he was getting the respect.
And, you know,
Second.
So, just in kind of one of my last questions, from your childhood, one of the things that interested me about your last interviews, you were talking about when you were a kid, you must have been about, I don't know, talking about 1980s, so you must have been about 10, 9 years old. You were talking about the struggle and how you felt. You always wanted to be part of it, even when the other boys chased you away and said, no, go home, you're too small. At that time, what did you think it was all about?
Well, what do you mean?
Like, you know, when you saw people toying outside, or the so-called struggle that you, as a young man, wanted to be part of. What did you think the struggle was about? What was it against?
As I was also participating in the strike, even if they were chasing me, saying I'm still young. But the songs that our parents and my brothers, they were singing, they were demanding the release of the former black president, Dr. Nelson Mandela. So we were aware that the black people, they were oppressed. Even if I was still young. So I know that the black people, they were the enemy of the white people. And then I was aware that this up and down of the Toitoys is because of the former black president. He was arrested, and then people demanding the release of the former president. And they were also singing to say, we need free. And then also the name of the Pretoria was flying in our songs, in the songs of our parents and the brothers, as if the Pretoria is the bad a province, or is the bad city for the black people, is where the apartheid is from.
One quick question about your father. Just before that, did your father ever cook for you?
Yeah.
Is it you? Because that's what his job was a chef, right?
Yes. He was cooking when he's off, if he's not going to, if he's not at the work. He was cooking in the home. He was just saying, my mother, she can sit down and then she can cook for us. Even if it's on the holidays here, she was like to make chips for us because it's what is available here. See, he can make chips and then he can buy fish and then he can cook for us, and then he can bring, come with, he can go to town, try to make a sweet for us here. Everybody in Christmas, we can share the sweet.
So that's very unusual when the man is doing the cooking, isn't it, in the house?
Huh? Yeah.
In terms of the
woman.
Yeah. So that must have been good for you as kids to.
Yes, and then we were just loving and saying it's good.
Sure. Okay. Just to follow on from that time in the '80s, were there not was there any, even though you were young, was there any division in this community during the 80s? I know that this area was still, by the apartheid authorities, was considered to be almost part of the homeland system, wasn't it?
Mm.
Between those that were cooperating with the apartheid authorities and those that were on the other side? Was there division here?
Yes.
How did you witness that as a teenager, as a young boy?
I remember, I don't know how I was, I don't know if I was still 10 years or somewhere there, but in 80s somewhere in to 90s. The people from Isaac's side, Chief Isaac, but that time it was not Isaac, he was, I don't know his name, I don't know if it was Isaac's father, when he was still a leader, and then he was still alive on that side. And at this side, Ralph's father, he was a chief in at Roman Pashani. So those families, they were fighting themselves. And so there was a difference between this community. So on the chiefness, who is the right chief, who is not the right chief. So that division, they were there. at that time.
But there were, like, when you were growing up, there were no kids that you treated differently because they were they were seen to be part of families that were not in the struggle.
In?
Were there any, you know, like when you're a child and sometimes you look at, other people and you say, ah, we don't like you because you're not part of us.
Yes.
Was that at all the case?
Yes, I believe there was that treatment. Even if I've never saw other people treating, but they're just talking that Dale McKinley is under Chief Huete, so that is why he's behaving the way he's behaving. And then Mahoha and Ahmed, they're doing that because they're supporting a chief, the Rutla or somebody. So I believe that that treatment was there.
And what's the main aspect of, like, when people ask, like, if I say he's not part of us, was the main aspect of that people's affiliation to different chiefs?
Yes, they were supporting, and then even they were not afraid to go to attend the meetings. And then when the chief wants something to do something, they were affiliating or they were paying the money to chief and then to say. And then when they want a place to stay, when they want a place to make a farm, they were going to play a chief, and the chief wrote in the letter for them and allowed in them. When they want to go to practice here, maybe to do something at the offices of the government, they were getting the letter from the chief. So they were not shy to go to the chief.
And did any of this, like, fight between the two chiefs have to do with the relationship of any of the chiefs to the homeland authority? Like, of the two chiefs, either Isaac or
Ralph.
Yeah, Ralph's father. Which one of them was recognized by the homeland authority as the right chief for Mandasuk?
Ralph's father, by that time, was recognized by the government. And I don't want to also maybe to chip on that issue, maybe to say who was the right chief and then who is the right chief now. Because there is still a problem in the province, and that problem is still going on. There is a commission, so of who is the right chief. So even myself, even if I know what my parents told me, what the community are saying, and then I can't maybe say that on the media to say Ahmed or Khwete Mahogo is the right chief, there is a commission, and we must just respect the commission until they give us the answer who is the right chief.
But traditionally, I'm not asking you to say to which one, but your family then would be associated with one of these chiefs.
Yes. All right. Yes.
The other thing, Emmanuel, that we didn't talk too much about in our previous interview was your high school days, when you were a student here in Mandasuk at the high school. Just give us a... it was during a very... by the time you were in high school was the early 90s, right?
Yeah.
So give us a sense of how high school was here for you and what you guys did. What did you do when you were a teenager besides go to school?
At the school, dear, it was good when you meet different students from different villages. And then, because we were sharing the idea, I was the captain of soccer team at the school, and I was also playing soccer. And then I was also like to talk about soccer at the schools. And then, by that time, is when the national team was still tough, and then Chiefs and Pirates and Sundowns, they were still tough. So we were just always talking about that. And even in the classes, you know, when we are at the school, there is your favorite teachers. So even myself, I was having my favorite teachers. Even if I didn't tell them that are my favorite teachers, but when they would come into the class, I was feeling that, no, I have to sit down and come to listen to my teacher now is coming. And then it was because of his manner, it was because of the respect that was given to the to the to to the students. And then other teachers, we know when other the teachers, most of the teachers, they are from other provinces or from other villages. So they are staying in Mandasuk at the quarters, at the rooms where the school is. They will go around in Mandasuk. And myself, I hate the teachers who are proposing the children, the students, I mean the students, the girls who are still attending the schools. I hate the teachers who are not teaching the children what they have to do in future, and then what the reason why they are at the school. And teachers, those who are proposing, the students, the young girls who are still attending, they're going there by the advantage that they are the teachers. And then really, they will agree with that teacher. And then it's either they will get pregnant or they will look that they are bad because they are in love with the teachers from the other children. And then it will be bad for other children. And also to say that those teachers, they are abusing the children, because really if the teacher is in love with the student, really that teacher is more than age of that student. So it's totally wrong. And then the teachers who I was positive to them is those who are there teaching, and then always giving the courage to the children what they have to do. And especially those who are sticking in the Bible. Bible is different pages in the Bible. It's somewhere the teachers, they were encouraging the children what they must do until they finish the grade 12. So really, I was enjoying when I'm going to the school.
Was there a lot of that though, where kind of older teachers would seduce younger women in school?
They were?
Was there a lot of teachers seducing young girls in school?
Yeah, maybe 3-4 teachers.
No, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. And then I remember one day, when we were out from the school, taking the trip to somewhere, and I told them, but I'm still remember even if I was drunk, I told them that they are taking the advantage of proposing the children because of the teachers, and then what they are doing that is out for me. They're not supposed to do that, and then I'm not meaning that I wanted them to give us the chance to propose the children. I was saying that because really it's bad to me.
You see. Can I ask you, how were you when you started drinking?
I started drinking when I was 14 years, 13 years, 14 years.
It's very young, and how? Was it young for other boys in the area to start drinking?
For?
Like generally, your friends, did they also start drinking around the same time?
Yeah. Other people, they started drinking when they are 12 years in prison. I started to drink when my father, he was drinking, my father. And then he was drinking the brandy. And then when he's coming for the holidays, he was coming with his, in African say, podcast. And then sometimes he's sleeping and then I'm going to steal his brandy. And then he was coming with a silver of money. When he was at the Frenachem, when he's saving a loose money, he was just putting the money in the tin or in the coffee. And then when he comes home, he just comes with that money and then he'll give that money to us. And then where I'm getting a chance to get money to buy some beers. So it's where I started drinking with my friends. just coming together and then to put money together and we buy like we need.
And were you a heavy drinker?
Yes, when I started, when I was 16, 17, I was heavy drinker.
You mean every day or every weekend?
No, yes, I can say maybe every month. I mean, I never drink every week. So because also my brother and my parents, they didn't like me to drink. They didn't like really.
And what about other, like, was there, in this community when you were growing up here as a teenager, was there any other drugs besides drinking? Were people doing, were they smoking? Dacha?
Yeah, because we are just next to Lulu Mountain. Yeah, so I didn't even touch Dacha. And I don't know why, because I was just like other people, how they are living. So other people are drinking and smoking Dacha. So even people who are living here, they are having some in their yards. They are plowing Dacha. So there is a lot of Dacha here.
Okay. Now we're just going to just shift.
Just a quick question. If your child were to start drinking at 14 years old, how would you feel?
I was happy to do.
No, I'm saying if your child.
Oh. It's just I'm having a daughter, and then I don't believe that girls they can even touch the alcohol. But even if I was having a boy, I was going to be against that, and. Because to me, to drink is not a good thing when you are still young. When a child is above 18 is where she can or he can take the responsibility. So it means she can decide what is the good, what is the bad, what is bad. So it's where he or she can decide what is the best and what is bad.
Just before you move on, just one question to follow up from this witch burning.
Okay, before that, it's a follow-on question, just to bring it up to date. I mean, you said, you know, when you were growing up, mostly the drinking and a little bit of the dacha smoking. Now, in the situation in after 94, has it changed or is it pretty much the same? Mostly drinking, smoking some dacha, most of the kids around here? Or is there other things now?
Yeah. It's been, yeah, it did change a little bit there. Because people there are aware that if you started drinking when you're still young, your future is dead. So they are aware now, if you smoke dacha when you're still young, you can become mentally disabled, or you can lose your future, or you can be arrested by the police because that is against the law. So those people who are still doing that, they're just few. People they've realized by other people who now their future. You see the person that is still young, but he looks old because of he started to drink when he was still young. So you can see that he looks still young. Because of dacha, he looks old. He's always having BB and the newspaper in his pocket. And in dacha in his pocket, he's always behind old people looking for beer, where he can get traditional beer. So you see, his future is dead. So those people who are still doing that in this village now, there are few.
Yeah, I've just got about 3 minutes, so just a quick question. You know, we were speaking to the counselor, and he mentioned that you were asking about the 1980s, and he said there was witch burning. Do you know of this?
It depends.
Burning witches.
Yeah.
Did that happen?
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Yes. I did know, as I said to you, that there was a difference. People they were divided, or to say, the deal is under somebody, and the Ahmed is under somebody. And also, I also emphasize that the white people, they were the enemy of black people. I remember the comrades from the same village, let's say in Sukhun, they have banned the people, and they have banned the towns at Beggarsford. Because of that town, it was for the Indian and it was for the white people. And then meaning that the white people, they were supporting the old government. And they were banning the people, saying those people are Izimbimbi. So they are taking the information to the police or to the enemy of the community. So I saw that it was happening. And then it was happening by the reason that I'm raising to you, that they were taking information from other people. And also the this issue of the enemy of white and blacks by that time. So when black people meet with the white people, it's where his fight is.
Okay, thanks. Just changing cassettes.
Menu, I'm gonna ask you something. You need to stop moving so much. It's fine, but like a little bit less. Okay. All right.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned quite a lot in the last talk we had with you was that the police in this community, for a long time, have not had good relations with the community, the people, and have treated them badly. Yeah. You told us about some of your own experiences when the protests and everything else. And you said the beating, arresting, torturing us. Give us some stories about some examples about that, about how that has happened here. When you say particularly torturing, what do you mean by that?
I mean, dear, people get beaten, and then people cut shots without the reason. And when I'm saying without the reason, dear, is that people, they were protecting their land. People, they got the right to speak aloud if they're not happy in this country. So the behavior of the police, they're just talking to our parents the way they like, because are proud of being the police, because they are having their weapons with them, guns and other spread. I'm saying they've tortured our people, they've beat them without the reason. They've shot them without a reason. They've said a lot of things, bad things to them, to say, no, they are police, they can do anything they want, they can arrest them. They have arrested our people without the reason. And the other people, they don't want to go to the jail. They're going to the jail because the police abuse them, just arrest them without the reason. So they've tortured our parents, they've tortured those people they were arrested without the reason. So locked them up in the jail without the reason. Because of maybe they've been bought by other people who wanted those people to be arrested.
Do any of the policemen that you've had, that this conflict has happened with, do they live in this community? Or do they come from outside?
No, they're just next to this community. They're outside, yes.
So there's no policeman here in Mandasuk?
Yeah, the guy who's the police here is working at Beggarsford. He's not working at Amaroy. There's a policeman in this village.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that is part of the reason? I mean, in the old apartheid days, what they used to do oftentimes was bring people from outside the community, because then they thought that they wouldn't treat people with respect, and, you know, because they don't know them. Whereas if you have a police force that's maybe close, then it's a different thing.
And then they will treat you better because they know you.
Exactly.
I don't think it's that reason. I think the reason is just the way they've treated us is because of the whole that police station is the way they've given the instruction how they must treat the people of Mandasuk. It's not that because of the maybe they don't like, it's just the instruction, the way they get the instruction from the boss of the police station. They've instructed them to touch us to the way they did is because of the instruction. We believe that it's because of somebody pushing the police to do that. So it's not the aim of the police, because I think they are well trained, and then they know their job, what they have to do to make peace from both parties. The main of the police is not to cause the violence, is to make sure that everybody is free and everybody is safe in this country.
So when you say someone is pushing them, can you clarify what you mean?
Yes, without the fear, I can do that. We are aware that most of the people, if you can see now, the cases that they are flying, we know how businesses work in this country. Most of people, they are facing the charges. The great police, the respectable police, they are facing charges in this country because of the corruption, because of bribery, because of the of looking something in his pocket. But I'm not saying, I'm not pointing a finger to somebody. I'm just talking generally that people they're getting something from other people. If you look now, community of Mandasu is fighting the mines in this village, and then we know that when you're talking about the mines, we're talking about the money. They are doing a lot of money. Platinum is doing a lot of money. Gold is doing a lot of money. Chrome and other stuff, they are doing a lot of money. So when those people, when Patrice Motsepe talks, everybody is listening in this country, in this province. Everybody is listening. When Anglo-American talks, everybody is listening, including the police. They are listening what is Patrice is saying, what is Anglo-American is saying. And then they will follow what those people they are saying. Even if they jump the law, they will follow secretly. And then they will abuse people, they will beat people, they will arrest people secretly.
Okay, and I was reading in the newspaper that since the last time that we were here, the mines have hired a whole lot of ex-mercenary soldiers who have now set up a camp here.
Yes, that is true. There is the foreign, I can call them the foreign security, because they are not talking our language, and then they are not from the country, they're outside of the country. It's true, the mines, they have hired the security to come to force to drill in our land or to force our land. I mean that those people, they are well armed, they're with dogs, firearms, tear gas, everything they got in their camps. And then those people, they are dangerous. They are not free. They are not friendly for our people. They are abusing our people. I will explain if you need me to explain that. And they are threatening them. And then they are doing everything they want. And then we are also experience the problems of those security, what they are doing in the family of the men and the women. So there is the problem that we are facing now in the village because of that security. And we don't need security we don't need security in our country. We don't need foreign security in our country to come to resolve our problems. We can resolve our problems ourselves and together as the South Africans. But because of the business, because of this game of business going up and down, because of the weak politician in our country, because of the people who are not following the rule of this country, those people, we are saying to them that they have to follow the rule of this country. They mustn't do things more than the way the rule of the country says.
Okay, and when you say that they are abusing people, and you can clarify that, please do.
Yes. If you read that article clearly, it's somewhere where we indicate that they are forcing the young girls, they're proposing the young girls, meaning they are forcing them. to be in love with them. And then they are also threatening our parents. When the cattle go around getting a green grass, they were also doing, what can I put that? Giving the cattle a wrong direction from where a man who wants the cattle to get the green grass or to get the proper grass wanted to his cattle to go to. They're giving that cattle because they're disturbing when they're drilling. They're with dogs, and they're threatening the member of the community by the dogs. They're just going to our yards without knocking, without asking the permission from anybody. When you ask them, they will tell you that they are getting the permission from the chief. In this country, the president of this country is not allowed to take decision on behalf of this country before he can get the advice from the community or from the people who are living in this country. So just imagine the person from the chief who is staying in the village in Mandasuk, telling the people that they must just come to the land and drill, make the millions without paying, giving the people who are living there even a cent. Now there is the issue of relocating the people. It's where now the fight is going to start. The issue where the security they are staying is still going to be the big issue. And take in mind that we are not refusing to return what those security they are doing. We know how our parents they fought. The old government. They were fighting. They were fighting like the way white people they were fighting against them. So we know how they fought that. And we are having the MK veterans. They are still in the villages. We can ask them to fight what those foreign security they are doing. And those MK comrades, they are not happy because really we don't need the foreign security to solve our problems. We can do ourselves. We can do without anybody from outside of the country.
Sure. Just one other question about the role of, well, it has to do with security. You've talked about how the police have become, in some ways, active around particular agendas, right? But in terms of basic safety and security of this community, just normal crime issues, not those kinds of things. How do you feel in this? Do you feel safe here?
You mean that we are protected by the police?
That's it. And if not, then why? What? Yeah.
We are not. We feel we are not protected by the police. The first example is just a new an example where this security, after this security comes, they have beat the people, they have shot the people. We opened the cases against those security. Those security have never arrested by the police. Even if though they come to see the incident, the police, those security, they were also threatening the police, telling the police that they can fight the police, they can shoot them if they want to fight. So we feel that really the police are refusing to arrest those security. The police, they are afraid for that security. So we feel that we are not protected because security, people, they just come and do everything they want in this village. Even do we know we have the our own police to protect everybody in this country. So I'm saying we are not protected and our police, they are not doing their duty, that we need to be protected. The song or the song of the ANC government is saying we need security for all, safety and security for all. Women being who is living in this country. Safe for all, not for minority people. If we go to the premier, you will see he's enjoying the luxury blue lights. He's with the police. I mean, when you see the blue lights, is there? It seems that somebody's coming. He's with police, so he's enjoying. But the people at the ground, they are not getting that safety that premier is getting, or the president of this country. So we have voted him to be there. We also need to be protected.
And what about just normal crime in this community? Is there a problem? And not with the foreign security, as you call them, but just normal people here.
You mean against the security?
No.
Like
against people, like someone steals, open, rob, armed robbery, breaking into a home, those kinds of things.
Let me be straight and clear. The people of Manasu, they are very, very quiet. I mean that, there is a young guys who can steal your cell phone, who can steal your money, but maybe if you forget your cell phone somewhere when you were sitting down drinking something, they can take it there. They're stealing it because they're not telling you, because you're still behind of the floor or the door. What? They steal it, but now, after the mine comes in Mandasuk, really the crime is going up. The reason of that crime, where we are having now East Nyonga in Mandasuk, people stealing the cables, and then people stealing other people's cell phone, and then in the pockets, and then trying also to threaten them to use a weapon when they steal things, is because of the mine. We feel it's because this crime is coming up because of the mines. When the mines come here, we believe that all this nonsense of crime, small crimes, all this issue of poverty is going to be finished. So, meaning that we are not going to get crime anymore. Everybody will be doing things themselves. So, people, they will get employment in their mines. But what we have been promised has been a lie now. There is no employment for the local people. So, that is why people go to the mines and steal the cable. That is why people go to the mine, try to steal other things from the mine, a fence, just to sell to get something to eat. So it's not the intention of the community to do the crime. We did get the promise from the mine that they would employ the people. So now there is a people from outside of the village working in the mines of Mandasuk. We know if the people of Mandasuk, they still need the job. So they're just going up and down here. And then I think it maybe is the road or is the way where the people of Mandau see how they can get the money. That is why they start to save the people and then to steal the car, to steal the cell phone, and to steal the cables.
Okay. Sorry, just shifting now just to some more recent things and questions that we never asked you. What do you think about the recent developments within the ruling party? The ANC, the last 6 months, all of the things that have changed, and has it had any impact here in this community and on the kinds of work that you do as
you
a community activist?
After the election?
Yeah, after Polokwane, yeah. Basically, yeah.
There is not something changed, and after the election in Limpopo, but from my side, I believe that things will be changed very soon by the new leaders of the ANC. Comrade Jay said, Khalma Mutanti, the secretary, Kwat Mandash, and then Balega Mbete, and then Posa. So I believe that they will make changes in the country, especially those people we are talking about, the landless people in Limpopo, the mine issues where people, they're just dumping the people, they dump the land of the people without giving them a cent. I was happy to hear the secretary of the ANC yesterday saying, Kwat Mandash saying, the unions, they must protect the workers. You see, I was happy to see a leader to say that, meaning that they want to see the better life to other people and also to the workers. So I think he's a great man, and then it's powerful to say it's not biased for anybody. It's not in somebody's pocket. It's not what he's doing. Speak about to say the unions, they must protect their workers, because now the mines, they just want to retrench the people because of the issue of the electricity. And then he did indicate that they've mentioned last year that they're on the way. On the list or on the road to see how they can retrain the people. So we don't want people to be retrenched. We need people to be employed. So the government is on the issue of how can we employ people, they can get employment. So we can see the rate of crime and other thing, poverty going down. But the mine still, you want to use the reason of the electricity to release people from the work. So we are saying government, I support the government, that's what he's saying. Eskom and the government, they must see how can they solve that problem, because we need the people to be employed and to get to work what they are doing every day, and so they can get payment, so their family, they can grow up.
Just on the Polokwane thing, apart from you, how do you think other people of Mandasuk got the news that